Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Banks get Federal Reserve's blessing. Gas prices are up 9 straight days. The S&P cracks 1,400. And our guest today, Brian Shannon from Alpha Trends. All this and lots more on episode number 255 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, thanks for joining me. This is Andrew Horowitz, and it is the week of my birthday coming up here, March 19th through the 25th or so. And actually, my birthday's on Tuesday. And I can't believe I'm going to be 47. Not a big deal, but it still seems kind of old every time I say it. As a matter of fact, I saw my 30th high school reunion, the notification come out that it's coming up. I'm thinking, oh my, that is such a long time ago, and am I going to go? I don't know. I went to my 10-year reunion, and that was kind of interesting, up in Comac South, up in New York, and out in Suffolk County. And I was like, that was interesting. That was a lot of fun, but I don't know. I kind of don't have a lot of relationships and acquaintances that I keep up with from that, aside from, of course, the random hello from people. But anyway, we'll see what happens when that does come. I'm sure a lot of you out there listening have been to your 10th or your 20th, and it's kind of interesting, isn't it, seeing how people change or sometimes don't change. But anyway, we have a great show lined up for you this week. We have Brian Shannon that's going to be with us, and he's always excellent to talk to about the technical side of things, and I have just a bank of questions to ask him about. I'll tell you, by the way, I spent last weekend, with my son down in the Keys, and we did some sailing, which was just wonderful. If you ever get a chance to get down there, the Key Lime Resort is just this cool place that you can rent a boat and get a cabin for a couple of days, and the sailboat's free. Get like a 22-foot Catalina. And also, we actually did some kiteboarding, which is really neat. That was fun to watch. Scratch the we part of that. There was no we involved in it. My son did it, and I watched. It was kind of fun. But anyway, if you do get a chance to get down the Keys, it's just a wonderful little place to get to. Spend a couple of days. I'm a bit more relaxed to get a little perspective. And like I said, let's get into the show and into the discussion here of what we're going to talk about. So banks last week got the Federal's approval, the blessing, the hip hip hooray. You can go ahead, most of you, and you can actually do some, maybe paying some dividends out if you want, and maybe do some share buybacks. And right out of the gate, before they even were allowed to present the information on who passed and who failed, J.P. Morgan couldn't take it anymore, and they announced prematurely, a premature announcement, so to speak. And it was on Tuesday, and it wasn't supposed to happen until Thursday. Well, meanwhile, that rocked the markets, and people were like, what in the world is going on? And the Fed was unfortunately or fortunately required to announce the rest of the candidates who were up for the quote-unquote approval early. Only 4 banks failed. It was Ally Financial, Citi, SunTrust, and also MetLife. And these did not make the criteria for the very stringent stress test rules that were imposed in a stress test, a mock kind of audit. But they get the chance to do so in the future. And, of course, that drove those stocks higher as well, not as grandiose as a Bank of America, up, I think, 20% last week. And J.P. Morgan, Wells Fargo, really did very nicely. Well, J.P. Morgan didn't get in trouble at all, of course. It was just a misunderstanding between the bank and the Fed as to when they were allowed to announce. Okay, so that's good news. That really drove the markets. The S&P went over 1,400, and we saw it barely hanging on through options expiration on Friday. Apple is trying its best to get above 600, but it keeps getting there and getting smacked down. Closed about 585 or so on Friday. And the iPad 3, or actually the new iPad, as they want it called, or as we want it called, the iPad 3, which will eventually take that over, I guess, selling very nicely. The lines aren't as long, but remember something. They're selling in a lot more stores, a lot more outlets, But at the same time, they're also doing a worldwide, or not a full worldwide, but a much greater exposure on the same day on Friday. They let the release go of the iPad 3. Got good reviews. Cost about $313 to actually make it, so the profit margin is somewhere about 100%. Not bad on a piece of technology, if you want my opinion. That's on their lower model, too. So pretty cool, and especially if there's some subsidies that are coming into play here as well from the various phone carriers, if there are any kind that will be applicable to it. And I think that's a pretty good statement for Apple in itself. We'll see what happens. You know, Apple has been climbing dramatically and been helping the averages just incredibly move up, especially the NAS and the NAS 100. We'll see what happens moving forward with that. It's kind of getting to a point that you would think that there may be some profit-taking coming on Apple. Nothing tremendous, but some profit-taking. Deutsche Bank took Apple off its conviction list, which was, I think, the first time that I've seen a downgrade of Apple in a very long time. But there are a lot of things that are happening in the coming week that I want to get to, and I want to kind of focus on. There's a question that I have from a listener. Of course, you could always ask me anything you want, and I'll be happy to either email it back to you or I will answer it on an episode. And you can just write to askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. I want to talk to you about trigger points research. I want to talk to you about economics. The big issue right now that's really kind of hovering over things, not only do we have the elections, not only do we have the currency movement, not only do we have Europe, but again, here we go with the gas prices. Oil has been moving higher, and that was a product of issues initially about economic recovery, the dollar moving down. Then we moved into the whole Iran situation. And then from there, we go into now the concern that, you know, once again, the dollar is moving lower, economy is getting better, and we're heading into the summer months. That's a time when, on a, you know, regular basis, people use more fuel. They use it for boats and, you know, all sorts of entertainment purposes. Not only that, they have travel. A lot of people are on vacation. So when we look at this, we have to consider, wow, isn't this setting up pretty well? When we see that gas right now is only 6% below the record high that was set in July of 2008, only 6% below. And oil prices, though, are substantially lower. So we're setting up for something here. Speculators, of course, are all over this. And I would not be surprised if this is an issue that really is front and center. Already Congress is starting to talk about the blatherings of Congress. Oh, we should release the strategic oil reserves. You know what, guys? That's in the case of an emergency. It's not here yet. Oil prices are just high. The only emergency is that obviously the higher the gasoline price at the pump, the emergency rests on you because your jobs are in question. That's the biggest concern. As a matter of fact, it was spoken about last week openly that Congress is going to be looking to do something because they're concerned that their approval ratings are dropping. Can you imagine that? They're going to save their tuchuses, save their hides, or their hinds, by releasing strategic oil reserves, or at least pushing it, so they can save their election campaign. I mean, just, you know, really, consider doing something a little bit earlier. This is the old, checking the liquid materials after there was potential bombs on the planes. I mean, just let's get ahead of the curve a little bit here. But this is going to be a big issue for the economy because it is an absolute wallet tax. I've talked about this before many times. We are at a point that this will actually tip the economy ever so slightly into the negative side, because spending will be constrained. There's no question about that. Absolutely no question. When you have gasoline prices at this level, at the $4 level, $3.90, $3.80, this is where all of a sudden things aren't spent on other items. Now, you also have this gigantic elephant in the room, which is people spending on, obviously, things like very expensive Apple products. Well, you have that whole mid-range products starting to get questionable. We also have the question of whether or not we're going to see any kind of degradation on, let's say, clothing. Maybe not teens as much, but kind of that mid-range. Ross Stores, we actually put a trigger point alert out on last week. And if you look at the stock chart, you'll see what we're talking about here. And basically, we're saying, hey, you know what? Look at that. Their earnings weren't so good. There's a lot of companies right now that are concerned because of the high cost of their input materials and softening sales. So, you know, this is an area that we really need to be concerned about, and I think that we really need to pay attention to. Watch what happens when it comes to, like, the University of Michigan. Their sentiment index came out better than the period before, but less than expectations. And a lot of that has to do with the price of gas, as well as the fact that unemployment is still higher than it should be. Let me get to a quick question here, and then we're going to talk about some trigger points that I really need you to focus on, because we have, since we launched, we've been tracking all this. You know, obviously, we've been doing this for a while before, but we launched, and since that date, we're tracking all of the trigger point alerts, and I want to share those with you. But let's get to a question first. This is from, let's see, this is from Don. He says, Andrew, in a recent podcast, you warned listeners to be careful of using the TVIX, T-V-I-X, as it doesn't behave right. I would love to trade the VIX, but I'm now nervous about it, as there are obviously issues with TVIX. I should understand, but I don't. Could you kindly comment on your next podcast as to what the warning is and why, and, for example, why one shouldn't use the this for a long-term VIX position? You know, it's interesting. The TVIX, which is a double, it's supposed to be at least, a double of the VIX. So a double long. So in theory, what happens here is we should be able to see that if the VIX is moving up 1%, this should move up 2%. But look what happened last week, for example. On Friday, the VIX moved lower by about 5%. The TVIX moved up 4%. On Thursday, the VIX moved down also. As a matter of fact, the VIX is at a multi-year low right now, which is sending me a little bit of a warning signal about complacency. Not, you know, not an alert, not a panic, but just a warning signal, because it seems to be getting a little bit too tame. Usually when you see these things come down so fast, or at least to these levels, it is a time for, you know, to be awake and alert for what is coming around the corner, because, you know, whether it's extreme on the high side, extreme on the low side, is usually turning points. But nonetheless, the TVIX is the short-term VIX. It is not traded as clearly and as correlated as the VIX. It can't be held, I think, unless you're going to be trading in and out of it and increasing it and decreasing it like we do for our clients, just as a pure investment, because it does not operate. And it does have probably about, and I think it's a less than about an 8% degradation on a daily basis. And this is commented about through many research pieces, because the way that it's structured, the fee structure, et cetera. And if you want to trade the VIX, and I'm not sure why, Don, you're really so, you know, excited about trading the VIX, you could use options. It's the pure play on the VIX. But remember something, that the VIX doesn't necessarily always correlate with the market move. And if you're looking to do that, then maybe you should be looking for a different instrument entirely. If you're looking for it as a hedge against a long portfolio, okay, fine. You can use options. You can use TVIX. But again, you have to be careful. It's not something that you're going to use on a regular basis as a buy and a hold. And because this particular instrument and many of them can't imitate, mimic, or correlate entirely to the VIX itself, you may get some, you know, wonky returns. And I would just ask you to take a look at a chart of the VIX and take a chart of the TVIX or the VXX and see how they don't actually work together, because the VIX is a, we'll call it an index, it's a measurement, and there's a contango issue sometimes, whereas the next leg out forward in terms of the calendar is higher or maybe lower. So you have different time periods and you have these rolling issues when it comes to trying to emulate this inside of an ETF, and especially on a double, you know, when you have a leveraging effect. So again, you can use this, but use it as a, we'll call it a swing trade or a multi-day trade maybe, but, you know, be careful, because you can get, you know, a little bit zapped on a situation where all of a sudden, you know, things like the VIX, the markets go down, the VIX goes up, but this thing goes down also. So you got to be careful about that. It doesn't always play as it should. I mean, there are times that it will, but and mostly it should. But again, there are times that it's very dangerous. So that's what I wanted to bring up about that, but check it out. Before we get to our guests, let's talk about some trigger points. So we're going to put this out actually on Trigger Point Research. If you haven't gotten your free trial, seriously, we're not going to have free trials forever. We have a 14-day free trial that's available right now, and you can go to triggerpointresearch.com, and it says right on the thing, you know, if you want your free trial, click here and blah, blah. But basically, or you just click anywhere and it says check it out. Let me tell you, we started this, the site went live 2 weeks ago, okay? And through, we're talking about now, which is, we'll talk about the 18th, okay? The 18th of March, so 2 weeks, two full weeks. We have eight of the 12 trades that we actually alerted were profitable. After 1 day, we do different measurements, okay? So we want to look at something that, and this, by the way, let me back up. This is designed to look for alerts for something that can be really ready to break up or break down or bounce. So we're looking not just for, oh, a little lollygag up or down. We're looking for something that can be very substantially move in a period of, let's say, 1 day to 2 weeks, something like that, as much as 30 days. But we're looking for this opportunity, not for an intraday trade, but we're looking for a multi-day situation or week, if you will, that is looking for some great opportunity for upside or downside pressure. Now, with that as a backdrop for a second, okay, eight of the 12 alerts that were actually triggered during the last 2 weeks had an average of a one-day gain of 3.4% in 1 day. 1 day after the trigger, they were up 3.4%, okay? Since inception to date, which is 2 weeks, an average gain of 5.5%. But let me share a couple of things with you. We had, on March 6th, we recommended, or the alert came up of Carbo Ceramics, CRR is a symbol, at 92. It's about 105 now, 14% profit. New Oriental hit our alert and then kind of jammed up. X, U.S. Steel, was up 4% the day after. On a breaking down, we had Green Mountain Coffee Roasters for a 22% gain. Deckers, 6% gain. Now, I want to share this with you. This is the important thing. Listen to this. Only one of the 12 that were alerted, if you held it through back and forth and all that, was a loss. If you would have taken your possible profit, everything was profitable, up to Carbo Ceramics of 14% maximum, Green Mountain 22%, U.S. Steel 4.2%, Ancestry.com 8%, Deckers Outdoors 9%. So if you would have had the alert and gotten out of it at the right time, if you would have had some stops or at least some points that you would have taken your profit out, that's your maximum. And your worst loss would have been 14% with Cliffs, but you would have been stopped out well before that. The 1 week gain on any of these, we only have a batch of those because it was 2 weeks ago. Ancestry is flat again for that period of time. If you would have taken your maximum profit, you would have made 8%, but it's moved up and down. Green Mountain, 18% if you just held it. Deckers, 5% on the short. So these are the kind of things that we're looking for. We're looking at these type of alerts being triggered through an algorithm that was developed by us and TAS Professional. And we're giving it to you because a lot of people ask us, hey, can you provide a newsletter? Can you provide a subscription service? Well, here it is. So if you want to check it out, again, this is not going to be here forever, this 14-day trial, go over to Trigger Point Research. We'll have a link on the site of the Disciplined Investor so you can see it right in the show notes. We'll have here it is, here's the trial information, and I suggest you do so. You get email alerts immediately when the trigger is alerted. It is not available on the website. It's only for subscribers or the trial. And also, we have a new text messaging service that is being implemented right now. So you get a text message when the alert comes out immediately. We tell you the downside, the stops. We tell you where to actually enter, and we give you that recommendation. And then you go do it on your own and, implement it if you choose to. So pretty cool stuff. Anyway, I thought we'd spend some more time on technical analysis because it's very important. And technical analysis, obviously, is Brian Shannon's his proficiency. But before we do so, let me just mention to you real quickly that GoToMeeting is the sponsor of this particular episode. And what's great about GoToMeeting, of course, as you know, you can, quickly meet like any other service. But the difference is here that you have the ability not only to collaborate with friends, family, or colleagues, but you also have the opportunity to do it very easily, very efficiently, very cost effectively. And more importantly, you can do it with seeing people right up there as you're doing things. So when you're talking about this particular project, when you're talking about a family picture, you can see people because GoToMeeting has this new service called HD Faces. Now, this is by Citrix, which is really interesting and important to take note because then you can really, I think, understand the level of integrity they put into building all of this. And you can really help build some confidence and trust and make your meetings more effective. All you have to do is go to gotomeeting.com, click on the try it free button, and use the promo code podcast. Gotomeeting.com. Be sure to use the promo code podcast for 30 days of free GoToMeeting with face-to-face online meetings. Isn't that great? I love it. Let's get to Brian Shannon. Back by popular demand, and I mean popular demand. He hasn't been here with us for some time now, but he's a good friend and someone who really knows the markets inside and out from a technical aspect, technical analysis. This is Brian Shannon. He is the writer, the originator, and the owner of Alpha Trends, the website that brings you all sorts of great, not only technical analysis discussions, but movies, actually seeing what's going on, and the author of Technical Analysis Using Multiple Time Frames. And you've heard me talk about this before, because if you could find a better book with pictures that are in color, it's kind of like a great way to learn technical analysis, because it's not obscure ideas. It's just right in your face, charts that are in bright color and explanations. So with that introduction, Brian, how's it going?
Well, that was a very kind introduction. Thank you, Andrew.
Nope, well, you deserve it. So let's talk a little bit about technical analysis. And we've talked about this on this show before many, many times, not only with you, but with others. And I thought it was kind of interesting that the current environment that we have right now, and let's start with January 1st or 2nd of 2012, when we saw an absolute reversal of desire to be in stocks, and what has happened since then in terms of trend changes or not, and what your take is on it.
Okay, well, last year, the second half of the year was just incredibly choppy. I think one of the most frustrating times of my career, and I think that was mirrored by a lot of other people that I follow and respect. Now, the market's always going to throw curveballs, and I hate to make excuses, but it sure did get a lot easier since January 1st.
Yep.
What we were talking about at the end of last year was an inverted head and shoulders pattern on the S&P 500. I'm sure you probably saw that.
Mm-hmm.
It started down at about, well, the head was about 116, and the neckline, it broke basically the first day of January. And we recently obtained the target from that up at 138. And of course, we took out last year's high, and we've been holding above that level. Now it appears that this market is searching for the next level of potential resistance, which I think is probably up near about 144 on the SPY. That was the high basically, it was the high in 2008 for the SPY, and an area of support that broke down in late 2007. It was tested a couple times as support. So it looks like we're still heading higher. It's, the path of least resistance is higher, and it's innocent till proven guilty.
So what do you make of the current trend, though, whereas, it's been, let's say, 3 months or 2.5, 3 months of upward action, and very little, if any, breaks in that. In other words, there has been clearly an uptrend. Okay, fine. We can identify that, and just by looking at it. I mean, not to be a technical analyst to see that, right?
Sure.
Do you recall a time where there's been such a bias towards one side, whereas it's almost like they won't, and whoever they are, won't let it at least rest for a few days? I think we've had one back-to-back day down in the S&P since the beginning of the year.
Right. I think there's only been one down 1%, and there were some statistics I saw about that. That it's not unusual to see this type of rally. And, I was thinking late 1998 after, I think it was long-term capital, we saw a real strong period in the market. In early 2009, we saw a strong period with an uninterrupted trend that no one wanted to believe. So I don't think it's unprecedented, but every time you get into this situation, especially after coming through so much negative global economic news with, we've been climbing that wall of worry. And, when we see this type of environment, it's easy to be skeptical of it. But, the thing that I'm most fond of saying, and I bought the website because I like it so much, is only price pays. So I bought onlyprice pays.com, because we can do all this analysis and you could look at the volume of the S&P 500 and see that it's been declining all year basically, but the market keeps rallying and you can't take the volume to the bank. Only price pays. So yep. If we keep our analysis simple, You know, it's kept us in this trend. We saw a little bit of a breakdown a week and a half ago. That last Tuesday, we saw a gap down. That got me near-term cautious because we broke some support in there as well at about 135.5. But we quickly got back up through it, and that, you know, that which doesn't kill it's only going to make it stronger, as they say.
Well, it's interesting because we actually also came in. We have we'll call it a four, ratcheting a four level indicator for market trends. So we'll start with a strong downtrend and then a downtrend, and then you have an uptrend and then you have a strong uptrend, right? And it depends on which way you come from, depending on how it is, right? You can go from a strong uptrend, you can go from uptrend to a downtrend or a downtrend to an uptrend. I mean, obviously. And depending on which way you're going depends on how strong it is in terms of the signal, right? One's going down, one's going up into the same signal. So we actually knocked it down by one because the indicators, again, did fall through some important support. So it was actually ATR support of a blended index that we use. And actually, I think we're approaching the point where in just a week and a half later, which I find interesting, you may actually bring it back to a strong uptrend.
Yeah, that's where using multiple time frames really helps, is that at the time that I was starting to go cautious, we broke below the 20-day moving average, we broke a little support at that 136 level, and I was saying this doesn't mean just because we broke this uptrend line that's been in existence since late December, it doesn't mean that the market's reversing. A lot of times you see a trend line break and people think, well, that means time to get short, when in fact it just means the rate of ascent has started to slow down. But when we have, different messages from the various timeframes, meaning the longer term time frame is still in an uptrend, you generally want to give the benefit of the doubt to that longer term trend and not necessarily take short trades, in other words, when we have a longer term uptrend. Or if you do, be sure that they're just scalps. I mean, you see it every day that people are trying to call a top in Apple and it just continues to soar higher. And the same thing goes, on the flip side, if you look at natural gas, it's been in a downtrend for years. And, every time it gets a little bit of a blip, people are, looking to, for the turn, and it's just not happening. It takes longer time. It's a process.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, it has to start somewhere. And that's funny you mentioned natural gas because we caught it on the bottom. Now, there's been a lot of bottoms. Let's just state that fact, okay?
One of the bottoms.
We were brilliant. We caught it on the bottom. We made a few percent on it. It was very nice. It actually really ratcheted up higher. It actually even closed above a level that you would call a turning point, a low point resistance point. Obviously, to get to the real resistance point, you'd have to go much higher. But still, it was still on that way, and it was breaking out a little bit from that low point. And then just all of a sudden went like blah. It's amazing because, and we can get into this whole discussion about natural gas, but it's kind of fascinating with all the things that are going on with natural gas. The play is definitely the natural gas sector companies. Those have been doing very well. You got a Clean Energy or Westport Innovations, LNG, GLNG and all those. Those are a different story, and they're actually being helped by some of the lower costs. But nonetheless, one of the things you mentioned was the whole idea of volume. Now, volume may not be important, but you also have to agree that when you're looking at – well, you don't have to agree. I'm going to ask you. Wouldn't you agree that when you're looking at the level of ascent or descent, that when you do see the turn, if it turns in either direction, that taking volume into consideration at various points is important because you can have pockets and holes and these zones that become very, very quickly moving if there was no volume within that area prior?
Absolutely, and I don't think that you maybe I misunderstood, but I never said volume's not important. You have to have some volume, obviously, for a market to move. But I think that people place too much emphasis on, yeah, it was up 3%, but it was on light volume. Who cares what the volume was as long as you have a good risk management and, you look at those divergences and say, well, it's up on light volume, so I'm going to be a little bit more careful, a little bit more vigilant is all. But again, if we can go back to natural gas, if you look at, people say the big volume and even in Apple, the big volume is where the distribution occurs. And we had that happen. The biggest volume that Apple has traded was back in mid-February as the stock hit that, ran through 500 and then pulled back. And I don't know how many people were calling for a top that day. And here we are 4 weeks later and 100 points or 20% higher in Apple and still no sign of a top. And UNG, we keep seeing larger volume, that we've get these bigger volume spikes downward, and it's not there yet. But if you I'm switching gears just for a little bit, which is volume at price charts. I'm sure you're familiar with those, and those really help kind of define where those pockets are that you're talking about, and help us really see where the support and resistance are, because as they say, price has memory, and the more volume that trades at a certain level, the more memory it's going to have there, and the more difficult it's going to be to get through. But if it breaks out and then we hit one of those pockets, like you were explaining, you can have some fantastic short-term moves, and that's really ideally what we're looking for.
Right, and as a matter of fact, and I think I shared this with you, but the trigger point research, the alerts that we utilize and that we have, is an algorithm based on volume at price. It is a very specialized market profile that Task Professional has put together, and we worked on that with them to make it so that we have an alerting system and that we're, you know, putting out these alerts. And I got to tell you something, it's interesting, because either side of it, Mollicorp last week, you know, there was a kind of a hole in the upside. Or you look at, for example, Green Mountain. Now, Green Mountain had news that caused a problem, but it happened right when there was this gigantic area of nothingness in terms of volume below it, and it was good for a 20% gain on the short. And, you know, if you kind of look for those and you can find those. Now, the question, of course, always is, what is that level? You know, and that's where the algorithm comes in. You could spot it at volume at price charts, no question about that. But, you know, this algorithm kind of, and I have to get that to you. I don't know if you've seen that at all from what we're doing.
I have seen it, and I like it a lot. I'm going to send you a link to a video that I did about volume by price charts.
Great.
That's up on YouTube, and I think it's a good educational one. So good. Maybe you guys can understand it a little bit better.
Yep. So let me ask you about, you mentioned the concept of multiple time frames, and let's kind of bring it down a little bit and explain where that comes into play, because, first of all, what it means and where it comes into play and who should be looking at what time frames more, you know, at a greater level than others.
Well, and that's the thing, is it's going to be different for everyone. A lot of it comes down to your comfort level, how much time you have to commit to the market. I mean, you know, you can trade off a 1 minute chart on Apple and you know, see just these gigantic moves each day, or you can be a longer-term investor who might only look at a weekly chart of Apple and decide that, hey, I'm going to stay with this as long as the 200-day moving average is rising, or I'm going to stay out of natural gas as long as the 200-day moving average is declining. So it depends on, you know, how close you want to put your face up against the glass. Do you know what it becomes noise to some people to look at a 1 minute chart. Warren Buffett would never look at a 1 minute chart, whereas, you know, I might be able to make a good living, you know, trading off of 1 minute charts. And it again comes down to, you know, what your personal preference is in terms of time to hold. And then you have to decide, you know, for an investor, maybe I want to look at a weekly chart for idea generation, a daily chart, so a weekly chart that maybe encompasses 5 years worth of data, a daily chart that brings us down to maybe 1 year, and then you could maybe look down to a 30-minute time frame of the last 30 or 40 days to try to find some of those key support and resistance levels to come up with your risk-reward ratio. For a swing trader, for instance, you might start with the daily chart as your long-term trend where you're going to do some idea generation. Your 30-minute time frame of the last 30 days would be, okay, here's my key support and resistance levels, you know, my risk reward, and then a shorter term, like a 10-minute time frame to over the last 5 to 10 days to say, here's my action point. Here's where I'm going to take the action. So the idea is, you know, generally three time frames. One, to identify where you're finding your ideas. Second, to see what your potential really is. And then third, to kind of drill down and hone in on the timing a little bit.
Now, when you talk about that, though, and, you know, let's kind of set this up that when you're looking at a chart, I know you like to use bar charts. Do you ever use candles? Do you like candles? I mean, if you were to set up a daily chart, your basic run-of-the-mill daily chart, you know, kind of visualize that and talk us through what it looks like.
I'm looking at it right on my screen. I do use candles. I had been using bar charts for a number of years and basically switched 6-7 years ago because People complain they don't like to see the bar charts. And I've gotten used to them. I don't think that the patterns are necessarily useful, though. The spinning tops, the dojis, the evening stars,
and all of those got good things. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't pay any attention.
Dark cloud cover.
Yeah, exactly. the baby with the bathwater. I don't pay close attention. They're visually more pleasing, I guess you could say. But when you, they don't offer any more data. I think that if you're looking at that daily chart and if you want to interpret what happened on one candle, you're better off looking at a 1 minute chart of that day's action. So you're going to have 390 individual candles that show you what were the real trends within that. So if you look at Apple right now is down $2.55 today, but it's had this big range. And if you take a look at the closer range, you would see that it's been below a declining volume weighted average price throughout the day. So that's kind of telling me that for today, at least, you know, the sellers are taking a little bit of control. But it's nothing more than a blip within this much bigger uptrend.
You're right. So when you look at that, I mean, it's funny because you can look at a line chart to look at the minute chart. It doesn't really matter the individual candles or the individual bars at that level when you're looking so closely at a historical point because, you know, you could see where it lines up and all that. But, you know, just to see the trend is what I'm saying. So when you look at that you have on a daily, let's go back to daily for a second. You have a daily candle. And what about indicators on there? Moving averages, volume, what do you have else on that chart?
I do have volume. I have a moving average on volume too, a 20-day moving average.
Just 20-day, okay. That's interesting.
Just to see what the average is. And I use that not necessarily to say what's today's volume compared to the average, but just what's the average daily volume? Is it liquid enough? I'm generally looking for a stock that trades at least 500,000 shares a day. That's really about as much as I utilize the moving average on the volume for. But so I have volume with a moving average on it. And then I have price action with a 10, 20, and 50-day moving average. And that's one daily time frame that I use. And then on another daily time frame, I have a 50, 100, 150, and 200-day moving average. So these just give me kind of visual reference points to kind of say, what are these longer-term type trends? And then when I get down to shorter term time frames, I'm looking at, you know, I'm a big fan of the 5-day moving average. And I think we've discussed this before. And, you know, people will sometimes get confused and they'll look at a 30-minute time frame and put period 5 when you're putting your moving average. And that's just giving you the average of the last 5 30-minute periods. So to get that 5-day moving average, it's 65 periods because there's 65 30-minute periods over the course of 5 days.
Now, that's important. That's important. Actually, let's back up. Two things. First of all, you're using simple moving averages?
Simple, yes.
Okay. Now, what's important, I think this is really important to hear again, that when you're using moving averages and when you put on a moving average on a chart on the price, let's say, it's all bar-based. That's important. Everybody needs to understand the word bar-based. So when you put a 30-minute or 60-minute a 120-minute, a one-day, a one-week, if you use a moving average that's 5, most charting systems that you have, especially the ones that are inexpensive or free, are going to be basing those on the same exact time frame. So if you use 5, it's going to be either 5 weeks if you have a weekly chart up. It's going to be 5 minutes if you have 5 minutes up. So you got to be careful not to look at those in the wrong way. There are some, like we use Bloomberg. We can put actually a multiple time-framed moving average on a chart. So I can put, for example, I can put a weekly time frame, 10-week, on a daily chart. And it's truly the weekly versus the daily. You know, but not every system has that capability. You know, that's not the easiest thing to pull in. But I think that's important to recognize that you need to use that. Now, why don't you use the exponential moving averages or any of the other moving averages that are available?
Great question. And the answer is because I think most people use a simple moving average. So I'm interested in the psychology of what are most people looking at, because these moving averages become a potential, they become a battleground. If you look at the 50-day moving average, most people have the 50-day moving average on there. And then it comes down to what's the psychology of the 50-day moving average? Why is it important? Why does the price often halt, you know, the pullback often halt at a rising 50-day moving average? And this is something I like to talk about as well, is the psychology of the various participants. If you had people who were, you know, short, thinking, hey, I'm going to short this thing because it should pull back down to the 50-day moving average, and then I'll cover some of my shorts in there. Well, it adds a little bit of demand. So they start to you know, buy back some of their shares at that 50-day moving average. Then you see other, you know, big institutions that are looking to add to a longer-term position, and as it pulls back to the 50-day moving average, they say, hey, we're going to redeploy some of our capital back into this stock. Let's start putting some bids in at that 50-day moving average. So you have demand from the shorts who are possibly covering. You have demand from these longer-term institutions. And then you have other people who are just saying, hey, the 50-day moving average often acts as support. I'm going to stick a bid in there.
Yeah, or, I don't know why, but it does. Yeah. So I'm just going to put money in. Exactly.
But I read in a book that it works. And oftentimes it does. But, you know, it's more important to say, what's the psychology of that? So whether it's a simple moving average or an exponential moving average, to me, is irrelevant, because what I'm not looking to do is to buy as it touches, you know, $51.20 is the 50-day moving average on whatever stock. Instead, I'm saying, okay, there's a reference point. That's where we have this potential battleground shaking, you know, going to shake out in here. Now, if we start to look at a shorter term time frame and we do in fact see that prices are starting to stabilize near here, then I want to look at that 30-minute chart and say, okay, now what's the time? Are we finding support? Has this little short-term pattern of lower highs and lower lows started to turn neutral? And then where do we get the higher high that brings the short to intermediate-term trend back in alignment with that longer-term uptrend confirmed by the rising 50-day moving average? So it's a reference point to compare price to. It's not necessarily, you know, blindly buy into that moving average.
Now, it's also interesting when you see a declining 50-day average when, in fact, a lot of the computer systems or alert systems or buying systems are programmed to actually buy on a 50. When you see a declining 50-day average, it's kind of interesting because, in fact, if you are short that position, what will happen is some of those systems will actually go on neutral, in other words, not buy into that if they have it. They'll maybe wait for a lower point, maybe like a 200-day moving average for that point, or realize that if you keep on buying a 50-day moving average that's declining and it keeps on falling and it keeps on falling, the truth is that you're buying at a lower price, and that lends itself to exactly opposite of what you're saying, which is the fact that it's a better short opportunity. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. And if you look at natural gas, we've been below a declining 50-day moving average for...
ever?
since July of last year. The July of last year, it's been capped, you know, held underneath a declining 50-day moving average. So I like to say, on a daily chart, if you're looking to trade off of a daily time frame, that if the 50-day moving average is declining, that market is guilty till proven innocent. Mm-hmm. You want to see it flatten out and prices start to accumulate, and then it holds above the 50-day moving average, and we start to see higher highs and higher lows above it. If the 50-day moving average is advancing and we experience a slight pullback below it, you don't want to get short, but you want to look at it and say it has a better opportunity to turn itself back to the upside, and it's innocent till proven guilty that we're going to see the potential here that it, you know, the shorter term time frame comes back into alignment with it. A great example is, you know, I bought today. I didn't buy it on the 50-day moving average, although you could have about 6 days ago. Was MGM Resorts, and it pretty much touched that 50-day moving average exactly. And, you know, the people who bought on that, it worked well for them. And it's, you know, what works best for you. I bought it today above $14.20, and I'm pleased with that trade. I certainly didn't catch the low at $12.90, but, you know, there's still room for it. And it comes down to, you know, asking yourself, where has it come from? Where does it have the potential to go? Has it expended too much energy in its rally, or does it look like it's at a big area of, you know, like the volume by price might say?
Yep.
There was a big area of supply here, you know, prior support here, which might turn into resistance. So, you know, people, like, it's like a PE ratio, I think, Andrew. People misuse those. They just say, hey, it's the PE is 10, so it's undervalued. Well, if the stock keeps going down, it's not undervalued. Or even a dividend yield. People will say, hey, I like to buy stocks when the dividend yield is 5%. and they'll buy a stock with a 5% dividend yield.
Yeah, but they lose 20% on the principal value.
Right, and then they kind of kid themselves into thinking, well, I'm getting paid the dividend, but you're down 20% in 3-4 weeks, and you haven't even collected one of those dividends yet. So you want to, you know, you can't look at anything in a vacuum, and you have to understand the psychology of it and just say, you know, it's stupid to buy just a 5% PE, or I'm sorry, 5% dividend. Is that dividend even safe? Is that company going out of business? So technical analysis is a tool. It's not a system. A lot of people build systems around it, but you know, I prefer to use some discretion and kind of leave certain parts open to interpretation and try to figure out the psychology of what's happening behind the scenes.
Right. And you know, it's interesting that, you know, when we look at economists and sometimes analysts, they, you know, there's a lot of opinion, you know, because you could look at certain numbers and then do some projections and think that, well, the economy is this and it looks like it's doing that. And it's interrelated with the world economics. And you kind of have to make up it up as you go. Whereas technical analysis usually is, I don't want to say cut and dry, but it's in your face. It's right there. There's the price. There's what's happening. It doesn't have to do this, but there's a lot of if-thens. If it does above this, then we're going to buy it because it has a potential to do that. And if it goes below this, well, it will fail and we'll be out. I mean, it's kind of a if-then concept, very computerized, you know, if-thens. But what's interesting I have found is that what used to be much more of a I'll call it more of a science. A lot of people think it's hocus pocus, but more of a science compared to maybe some of the economics because so many variables there. Is that the technicians that I've been listening to, not all of them, but some of them, have been kind of getting a little bit cloudy. For example, you know, when we talk about certain things that are patterns, and you may look at a Head and Shoulders or inverted, and there's some psychology behind that, not just the pattern and what it means, et cetera. But more importantly, you look at things like, for example, a golden cross and a death cross. When you see the 50-day moving average moving above the 200-day moving average, usually would mean a golden cross is that, you know, the shorter term, just like any other oscillator, is moving much quicker than the longer term. That means there's momentum in that direction on the short term, right?
Absolutely.
And the opposite is true also. When you see the 50 crossing below the 200, you have the death cross, meaning that, you know what, markets are moving or that stock is moving much quicker on the short term below. Now, I can't tell you how many times of late it hasn't been that many times, but recently, when a death cross occurs, it's history. It's something not even to look at anymore. You know, it's something that's happened in the past. Don't even pay attention to it. But when a golden cross occurs, it's like, ta-da! You know, you know what I'm saying?
I mean,
what is that about?
You know, Andrew, I don't know. It's you know, remember the Hindenburg omen that came out pretty close to the bottom?
Never heard about it before, by the way, until it came out with this omen, right?
It sounded great.
It made
some great press.
Right.
It sounded so ominous, but you know, we've been almost straight up since that happened. And you know, it is again, as you said, there is a science to technical analysis. There's no doubt about that. That you can measure and quantify and build your risk reward if thens, but there's also the application of determining what exactly the science of putting it into it. People have tried to emulate Warren Buffett in his formulas for success and haven't had the same type of results as him, because at the end of the day, he uses his discretion as well and goes in and drives a hard bargain and might do it with derivatives or something more sophisticated than what other people are able to duplicate. So it's a formula. It's something to kind of lead us in the right direction. And then we have to sit down and really think a little bit and apply, you know, what we've seen. There's, you know, you can't take everything so literally. That one of the other phrases I like to use a lot is, from failed moves come fast moves, because you'll see a stock break an important level of support or the S&P, like we were talking about, the S&P 500, the spiders broke that trend line that have been in existence since the beginning of the year, and they broke a little bit of support at that 136 level, and it didn't stay down there, and it trapped it.
It did for 5 minutes.
It did actually for about a day and a half, right?
Right, exactly.
What's the psychology of what happened there? Well, some people said, hey, I'm getting out of my longs here because the market's breaking down. Other people said, hey, it broke its trend line. It's broke even support. I'm going to press, you know, I'm going to lean into this on the short side. And then as the market recovers back up, the people who sold their longs are thinking, oh, shoot, I got to get back in. You know, I got to pay up. And there's not as much supply available there anymore because the weak hands, you know, so-called weak hands, have been shaken out. And now we've got another source of demand coming from those short sellers who are now saying, you know, as the market gap back up to that 137, they're saying, you know, this is not looking good here. We've got to cover before we lose, you know, potentially infinite amounts of money, or theoretically infinite amounts of money on a short sale. So they add that other source of demand. But where's the supply going to come from? Because you have these people who are holding, who believed in the trend, and they're not willing to let go of their shares. So the people who are on the sidelines start chasing, and the shorts start chasing, and you get a move like we saw here that's continuing even today up at 140.5. You know, just what is 3%?
Yeah, just a general trend over the week. Yeah, no, I agree with you. I agree. It's quite amazing. And then there's also the fact, and you know, put away technical analysis for a second. Just there's a lot of money in the system. There's a tremendous amount of money in the system. I want to switch over before we go and talk a little bit about indicators. There's two types of basic indicators. There's trending indicators and there's oscillators. And whether you know, if you want to find out more about that, I encourage you to go check out Brian's book. But I want to talk about a couple of things. One that, for whatever reason, I don't know what the reason is. Maybe it's a cool name. The one that the newbie and the person who doesn't know much about technical analysis that seems to walk into all the time is the MACD.
I knew you were going to say that. The MACDaddy.
Yeah, the MACDaddy, the Moving Average Convergence Divergence Indicator. It's just it's a mouthful in itself. And I mean this seriously. I want to know for everybody out there that's listening that really uses that as their kind of core thing, that it's very simple. Oh, how easy is this? If it goes from the bottom here and this one crosses up and then we get this little red histogram and, oh, it's a buy. And it may be, by the way. I'm just saying. But using the standard settings, using nothing more than, I don't know what it is, but it looks like it's turning up. What is the story with that? And where is, in your practice, in your way of doing things, which is obviously not only mentoring, but it's also teaching, it's also alerting, it's also, you know, you have the whole StockTwits platform that you actually provide a membership for and give information and I'll call them alerts, but, you know, ideas to.
What's I love how you work all the plugs in, Andrew. Sorry,
Thank you. Thank you very much, folks. Thank you. And now from our sponsor. And Brian doesn't pay me, by the way. Nobody pays me. None of the guests ever pay. They're just, you know, they're guests. The only person that pays is GoToMeeting, which I'll, you know, we talk about that. No, but seriously, what's the story with that? What's how do you use that in terms of implementation? And do you use it at all? And what do you like better or don't like about it? Or any of those?
Well, I don't really use oscillators and indicators, but the MACD is the one that I was drawn to as well, and I really don't remember why. But I think that if you understand the psychology of the MACD, it's kind of back to what you were saying with the Golden Cross and the Death Cross. So you have two different moving averages, and they're the distance between them, basically. So what's the distance between? And I think for the MACD, I haven't looked at the formula in a while. I think it's maybe like a 9. Period
13 something, yeah,
and uh-huh. in a 21,
right?
So you have a short-term moving average and a longer-term one. Well, the short-term one is going to be more price sensitive, obviously. It's going to respond quicker to fast movement, and the longer-term one takes in more data points. So it's, you know, divided by 21, it's going to be less sensitive on a 10 cent move than divided by 13. So what you have happen is the distance between these moving averages will spread out as the, you know, as the price momentum really like a market will break out or break down. You'll see them really start to widen. So what I like to use it more for than anything is a divergence. And what's meant by that is if you see a divergence in a stock that's moving lower. So you'll see a stock hit a lower low. And what the MACD will do instead is make a higher low. And what that's saying is that even though we just went below that last little low, let's say the stock, you know, bottomed it or showed a bottom, a temporary bottom at 15, then it drops down to 14.5. Well, the MACD is now diverging. And what that, you know, what the psychology of that is, it doesn't say buy. It says, look at this stock now because the momentum or the fear on this drive lower isn't as strong as it was last time. The speed of movement isn't as strong. So therefore, there's less emotion, less fear. And if there's less fear, it means that we're probably just maybe, we're maybe just taking some stops out, and that this market has the potential to make a quick turn higher. That's really the only thing that I like to use it for.
Right. With our that's exactly what we look at, the volume at price and the alert system that we use, and that it's important because there's two type of markets for that. Now, I'm talking about just trading now, and just for that we identify. There's only two. There's either a trending market or a consolidating market, and one leads to the other. Not always immediately, right? What I'm saying is that you have a trending market, like you said, you know, you're kind of moving lower, lower, and lower. And then you said that obviously the MACD may see a divergence, and what you're seeing really is a consolidation. Somehow it's not moving as low, and it's starting to compress and consolidate, right? Can you mm-hmm. picture this?
Yes.
And then you're either going to do one of two things. You're either going to stake it, well, one of three things, really. You're going to consolidate for a while, but eventually it's going to do something different. It's going to. It's either going to break down or it's going to break up. Now, it doesn't have to be crazy on either side, but that's the three possibilities. So what you're looking for is, okay, from there, where is the next possible moves? And what you're saying is very good, because you're saying, hey, the MACD is diverging. Be aware that, you know what, anything can happen here, but it looks like that the big selling is over in what you described. And be ready for maybe for some buyers, some bottom feeders to pick up here and to start moving this thing higher. And when all the weak hands are out and when all the sellers are done, there's only buyers left or vice versa, and then it moves the other direction. Stocks,
right, you get that quick snap.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, just something to think about. And that happens kind of all the time. Just look at a stock chart and you'll see that all the time. You'll see a consolidation point, then you'll see a break. Then you'll see a consolidation, then a break, either up or down. It all depends. Question is, where is that and how strong will it be? That's the big issue. You know,
For the divergence, I like to do it after you have a real strong sell-off. Maybe it's gone from 19 to 15 in the course of 3 days.
Yeah.
And then it bounces up to 15.5, comes down to 14.5 over the next 1 to 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
From there, a lot of times you'll get that quick snap back up to, let's say, 16, 17 bucks a share or a shorts cover. And they figure, hey, here's my opportunity. Then the bottom feeders come in. Those rallies don't typically hold for a longer period of time, but for a swing type trade, if you're willing to hold, they can be real nice, 2 to 3, 5 day movement.
Yep, I hear you. So, in closing, what is the thing that you're looking at right now from a big picture in terms of markets and things that you mentioned? You know, obviously that we're in an uptrend, no question about it. Until proven guilty, it's in an uptrend, and that's all there is to it. Are you looking at anything in particular, like the VIX, anything that's kind of, you know, making you wary, or is just kind of like, you know, all hands on deck right now and, you know, things are looking good, a lot of opportunity, and until anything otherwise, that's just the play?
Don't get me on a VIX rant.
Okay.
I think it's the most widely misunderstood, misused
I agree with
indicator
that.
There is. I really haven't seen anyone make money with it with any consistency. So I kind of ignore it, basically. But I think we're just in this – we're in this bull market. We're above a rising 50, 100, 150, and 200-day moving average in the S&P 500. We've just broken past last year's highs at about 138. And it looks like this market is – you know, its next test, the next key battleground on the upside – will be about 144. That's a potential resistance level. People look at it and say, hey, there's resistance there. We don't know if it's resistance until we go up there and test it and see if the buyers can regain control. So we're innocent till proven guilty. It doesn't mean that you just, you know, go all in on a day like today after we've been up from, you know, if you've been on the sidelines, mm-hmm. where we just came from 134 to 141 almost in the course of 6 days. So where have we come from? We've had this rally, and you know, you let it settle in, and you manage risk. You're looking for what I'm trying to do, and what I provide for subscribers is I'm always looking for the low risk setups with a good risk to reward that are within the overall uptrend. And it's just been long after long after long setup this year. People, you know, some subscribers saying, "Give us some shorts, give us some shorts." The market's not telling me to. We're not seeing good short opportunities. So that's the thing about technical analysis, is we have to really just be as completely objective about observing price action as we can, and try to you know, put Greece out of our heads, put, you know, Syria and all these, you know, the Middle East and Israel and, you know, in Iran, and put all this stuff out of our head and say, you know, what's the market doing? What is the big money? The smart money, it doesn't seem to be scared. They're just buying. We're in this uptrend. So if it mattered, you know, and people have been saying, well, this is a bullshit rally. We have all this bad news. Well, guess what? The economy is getting better.
Right. You know, and you know what, Brian, wouldn't you agree that there could be times when things are just absolutely perfect that the markets roll over too?
Right.
I mean, 2007, that's what happened. So the point is that you're better off looking at the market and secondly, looking at the things outside of it that may be contributing than looking at just the outside things and trying to make a determination of where the market's going to go.
The markets are the leading indicator for the economy. They've been predicting 8.6% jobless rate. You know, that's the message they've been saying. The market has been saying, hey, the economy's getting better. You know, yields have maybe started to bottom a little bit. And, you know, that's what the equities market's been telling us.
I hear you.
You know, all the bad news comes out at the bottom.
Yep. Well, this is Brian Shannon of Alpha Trends, and I know that you're going on like 6 years of doing this, right?
It'll be 6 years of Alpha Trends, yeah. Next, I think it's April 6th.
Cool.
And I'm going to do, if I can put a plug in here, I'm going to do a special promotion price for my service. So I'll be tweeting about it and that sort of thing. I'm at Alpha Trends on Twitter, and been fun.
Awesome. Yeah, great stuff. Also, the book, Technical Analysis, Using Multiple Timeframes, available at thetechnicalanalysisbook.com. And thanks for joining us. I really appreciate it. Good stuff.
Always great talking to you, Andrew.
All right, Brian, have a good one. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
Well, there you have it, Brian Shannon. And thanks for joining us, Brian. And thanks for being with us today, all of you out there. Lots of things to consider from what we talked about and lots of things to take a look at. We'll have all of this and more over at The Disciplined Investor. You just have to click the podcast or see the front page. And every single episode, we have show notes. We talk about the things that we discussed. You can find the links to the things we discussed if you're interested in it. And make sure that you check that out. And don't forget that every day we write something and we discuss economics or give you some good information about a stock or, you know, the markets or commentary or just blow off some steam over at The Disciplined Investor. So make sure to check that out quite often. And don't forget about Trigger Point Research. You can get those alerts for 14 days for free. And again, it's probably only going to be till the end of this month that we're going to have this free offer. So make sure to get those as soon as possible and you can see what's going on and hopefully make a couple bucks profit for yourself. Of course, there's a risk of loss. You have to be careful with all this. But it is there for you and you asked for it, so we did it for you. Anyway, thanks for joining me. We'll see you next week on another edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.